What's popping off, y'all? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, beside me, the master of disaster himself, Calphilio Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Happy Halloween. Happy Halloween to you, Cam.
Happy Halloween to you, sir.
We are actually recording this on Halloween.
Yes.
In fact, I just wrapped up trick-or-treating with Luke. Like, literally, I've been here at the studio for 5 minutes.
Dude, okay, so Halloween's been going on at my house for the last 3 days. I did not know that when you gain a granddaughter, you gain extra days of Halloween.
Especially because of the way weekend.
Yeah. It's been popping off, right? Like, literally, I've had people in this house coming and going, nieces and nephews and their kids and all. It's been madness. We've loved it. My daughter came home, the whole thing. That's the reason we've waited, because Kyle and I wanted to record this on Halloween.
Yeah. We record without telling most people, don't know that we record a lot of time on Sundays.
Yeah.
Because we have busy work weeks and stuff. But Sunday's always kind of like you spend the day with the family, then you get some leisure time.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we used to do it. We used to always do it on Sunday.
Yeah.
And with the Halloween falling directly on Sunday here in America, it was just perfect. So
yeah, we're going to rock it.
We did good, as usual. For those asking or don't know, Luke is Egon, the Ghostbuster.
Mm-hmm.
He had the whole proton pack and everything, and it went over really well. There was a lot of compliments, people asking, like, where'd you get that?
That's awesome.
He's and
threw it back old school.
No shocker, he's already talking about what he's going to be next year.
Man, we're going to have to load him up and take him to some cosplay things because he's going to go crazy.
I was going to say, I'm not even going to say what he wants to go as next year because we got 364 more days. There could be a whole bunch of stuff popping off.
Oh, there will be. Yeah, he'll change it a dozen times.
The Jacob went to Scream's Saturday night, which is where they have the...
That's the Ren Fair where they have it.
Right, Scarborough Fair.
Yeah, there you go.
Right, so it's like a big Renaissance festival place, but of course, this time of year, they change it in the... Halloween
I've
stuff.
Heard it's pretty cool.
He said it was awesome. They had like 5 different haunted houses and you got to go to all of them. Of course, he paid extra for the fast pass.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to go. But so they did that.
I'd be fast passed and I'd be running fast past the haunted houses.
You know, like when we went to get Luke's costume with the proton pack and everything, they just make stuff so much cooler now. Like when I was a kid, I remember my dad would help me like make it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't.
And it wasn't even that close because it's not like dad could 3D print the parts to look exactly like you find online, right? No, man. You just had to guess and pause the movie and look. And if you got lucky, you could get a magazine that you could see a decent picture in.
Right. Yeah. There was no YouTube where you could look at other people build it and then try to get an idea of how to, you know. But I remember. So let me ask you this. I know this shows our age, but like, do you think that part of that actually made it better? Because you felt like you had to create it on your own. And when you showed another kid your costume, they're like, man, that's awesome. How'd you do that? Where nowadays you just go to the store and you just kind of buy it.
Man, you know what? You might be onto something. That's the reason I really admire those that are like do the cosplay and those that do really go above and beyond and build all that stuff
mm-hmm.
is because it's not easy.
I remember to this day, and that's how well it stands out to me. I was about Luke's age. I went as Darth Vader. And I remember my dad taking me to Radio Shack, buying a bunch of circuits, a bunch of bulbs, lights, and he got this cardboard box. He knew how to wire it all up to where it took a 9-volt battery and the lights would blink and alternate. And I remember the rest of the costume was kind of crappy. My mom had a sewing machine and she bought like a pattern and sewed it. And then you bought the crappy mask.
Did she get any Gibsons?
Yeah, probably. But I remember when I finally showed up, the kids were like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I can still remember that. I doubt that Luke remembers when he's 45, that proton pack that we bought it. Spirit Halloween.
Maybe you ought to build it with him.
Maybe.
Maybe you ought to think about it and pick something out and go with him.
You're right. And I'm a loser. You're right. I'm a loser. I failed. Epic fail.
You are such a scumbag.
I'll tell you how big of a loser I am.
You don't have to tell me. I know.
Right. Okay. To the listening audience, I'll tell everybody how big of a loser I am. Weatherford was hit with like solar flares or something last night. And I'm such a piece of crap that like literally I'm always yelling at the kids after like 5 hours of no internet, no cable TV. I didn't know what to do. I was legitimately mad that it was Saturday night. And I, you know what we did? Me and Dalee played Rummy Cube, which is like a board game.
I played it
for 3 hours. That's what we did. And then finally like 1 a.m. I'm like, that's it. I'm going to bed.
My wife was out with some of her friends hanging out. My daughter wasn't feeling well, so she went to bed early, probably because she tries to eat good through the week. And then when she comes home, she eats crappy food. Mm-hmm. She gets a feeling bad. I'm like, look, what do you think is going to happen? I had the fire. I told you my fire pit going.
That's
I was just sitting outside listening to music like, well, What's going on, 1986?
I almost came over.
You should have just came over.
I probably would have. My wife recommended the board game. But, yeah. but up into that point.
If she'd have just gone to read, you'd have been like, well, here I come.
I tried to read. I got a new Stephen King book. And I tried to read that. But after like two chapters, I just wasn't into it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you hate that when you plan your evening and then the evening comes and it never, and you're just like, I don't know what to do.
That happens to me all the time.
Anyways, yeah. But we got a pretty cool show for you as usual. Check this out. This comes from a listener. It says, hello, guys. My name is Keith, but most people call me Skeeter.
What's up, Skeeter?
I'm from Southwestern Virginia and have lived here for more than 50 years. For many of those years, I was a professional EMT and have seen a lot of just plain weird stuff.
I can imagine.
But my story today is about my grandmother. She was born in 1911. It's a good year for pistols. And lived through many unfortunate and hard, sad times. Probably one of the saddest I can ever recall her talking about is when her brother, Dale, died at the age of 8 years old. At this time, smallpox and several other things were hitting the Appalachian Mountains hard, especially for children and elderly people. Anyway, my grandmother lived into the 1980s when she was suddenly diagnosed with cancer. It hit her hard and worked fast. She was transferred from our local hospital to the University of Virginia Medical Center. This was one of the leading hospitals for the treatment of cancer at the time, and still is a wonderful facility now. I have taken a lot of people there and unfortunately brought fewer back home. Anyway, my grandmother fought hard, but the cancer spread too rapidly and just didn't respond very well to treatment. She didn't last long, and the last few days of her life were spent pretty much in a catatonic and unresponsive state. However, the last day of her life, here on Earth, started with her waking up and telling everyone in her room that she was going home. My mother asked what she meant exactly by saying that, and she said, Dale, he came last night and said he was here to take me home with him. She then said, it's okay, and I love you all very much, and I'll go get a place ready for everyone. She then peacefully and quietly closed her eyes, and that was it. I've seen so many similar things over the years dealing with death. Certainly some are terrible, but definitely more than a few have seen long past loved ones just before dying themselves. And when you look into someone's eyes and they tell you that the loved one has come for them or is there waiting on them, you know it's true. Anyway, I enjoy your podcast and have recommended it to all of my friends. Keep on keeping on, and I may try and remember a few really odd things and pass them on if you'd like. Skeeter.
Thanks so much.
Well, Skeeter, I'm sorry about the loss of your grandmother, but I know exactly what you're talking about. It's not the first time we've heard of tales like that. That people, during their last hours or days, they have a sense of, not joy, but a sense of relief.
I tell you, there's a lot of visiting that takes place.
So what is that? Is your body in some kind of crazy self-preservation on the last few days of your life, releasing massive amounts of DMT or something, trying to, you know, just flood your emotions with stuff to make you better? Or are people from another place coming and visiting you? I hope it's the second.
Well, you know what? The good news for you is one day you'll get to find out.
That's true. That is true.
You won't ever be able to go, I don't know what happened for
long.
You're
not going to be like a guy that downloads his conscious into a hard drive.
Jesus, no. Too many people are attached to this place. No.
I'd mess it up. That's my problem. Yeah. I have a hard enough time downloading like episodes of the show and photographs to a hard drive. You think I can download my consciousness?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have to trust it to someone way more qualified than myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of I've got something here. So Lon, of course, we love Lon. Lon, we're always talking to Lon. Lon had a birthday just recently.
Oh, happy birthday, yeah, Lon.
Lon's been kicking it. I think he's taking a break. Lon's been like overwhelmed with stuff, but also he's got something going on where he's doing some more investigations of things going on. Hmm. But he had posted this recently, and this was a new one that had gone on in that flap of winged humanoids taking place in Illinois. And this is Cicero, Illinois. Listen to this, y'all. Let me get these old man glasses I've got
Cicero.
On.
Yeah.
Is it Cicero?
I think that's a bet. Yeah, back Cicero. In the day, that's where like Al Capone that's where they like hailed from, was Cicero.
Listen to this guy over here, right?
I've just seen it in a lot of the gangster movies.
So it says here, on July 3rd, 2018, between 11:30 and 12:30 in the morning, in Cicero, Illinois, my family and I were coming home from a fireworks show in Riverside, Illinois. This occurred in a residential area in the vicinity of West Ogden Avenue and South Austin Boulevard. We were getting out of the car two houses down from our house, making our way to the front of our yard. We had a really big tree in the front of our house, and my wife and my youngest daughter were still by our car. My middle and oldest were with me under the tree. So I said, "What the hell?" And my two daughters stopped and looked at me and said, "What was that?" I looked up right away to make sure nothing was going to fall on me. And as I looked up, whatever it was jumped out of the tree and flew up between my house and my neighbors. Now, it was a clear and bright sky. I don't remember if it was a full moon, but the sky wasn't dark. What I saw looked like the pictures of the Chicago Mothman. My two daughters saw it, and they moved towards me and said, "Did you see that?" I had my pocket knife out, and I told my wife and daughter, "Get inside now."
That's not a knife.
Right? So my oldest and middle daughters saw it as well. My youngest and my wife said that they saw the tree shake. Now it says here, 2 weeks later, we saw that the large branch on the tree was dead, and it fell on its own. The tree just keeps losing its branches until it was cut down 2 days ago. And this was actually October 25th of 2021. It says, wow. Before this incident, the tree was healthy and really thick and full of leaves. Now it goes on here. Lon actually spoke to the guy, and he said the description was 5 to 6 foot tall, thin, dark colored humanoid with wide wings that were shaped like those of a bat. And he said he could see through the membrane wings because of the street lights, and that he also noticed the feet of the winged being were shaped like those of a chicken, had long three-toed and splayed, and that the toes had been wrapped around the tree branch, and that there was enough street lamp light in order for the witness to observe the creature while in the tree. His daughter stated that when the winged humanoid was flying away, it looked back, and she noticed it had red eyes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's some more stuff. So still, all of the things that were going down in Illinois with these creatures, these humanoids, there was a lot of sightings, a lot of sightings reported. Imagine the ones not reported. But I'll know this much. I can't think of an animal that can light in a tree and then take off from a tree and then cause that tree to die.
Yeah, just by touching
it. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what that could possibly be. So anyway, that's creepy enough. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. And we come back, I'm going to be talking about all the high strangeness that takes place in our great state of Michigan here in the United States. So folks, I think you're going to enjoy it. Hold tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Y'all, here we go. Well, something creepy, I hope, to help get you through the Halloween weekend. So, I don't even really know where to start with all this. You know, it's always funny when you get going. Sometimes I have ideas, like I've got a lot of segments laid out. And then, like I've told y'all before, sometimes they just fall onto you, right? Like they just, like a crashing wave come down on you. And that's kind of what happened with this one. The wife and I were sitting around watching a little TV, and something had come on. I forgot what it was, and it was showing like a giant werewolf or something, right? Because it's Halloween time. And then she just sprung a question on me about Dog Man. So I go and find a video. I'm like, "Hey, do you want to watch some of this?" And she's normally, you know, doesn't, I won't say she doesn't mind it. It's just not something that's one of her interests. She has to live with me, right? That's the downfall. That's her penance for life, I guess, is putting up with me. So she gets it all the time. If we're talking about it, I bring up something. But this time she was like, "Yeah, let's see that." So, of course, I put on Seth's movie of the Beast of Bray Road. or the Bray Road Beast, about the dog man, you know, and we get into that whole thing. And then I start thinking more about Michigan and Michigan dog men, and it just leads into this. And then I find another story. And then the one story that I'm going to tell you at the end is what really pulled me into this. So I have done in the past different states as far as cryptids and things. And that's kind of what this is. Now, this is, I guess everything weird happens in Michigan, right? Like that must just be a really, really wild place. But where I wanted to start was Detroit. I've never been. I know it's, you know, I know Detroit's struggling. It's such an old area, you know, of the U.S. And it looks like it'd be great fishing. You know, everywhere you look, all the Michigan, you know, and all that, y'all know what I'm talking about. It's all the lake area. If you live up there, it's beautiful, beautiful places. But something about it, I don't know. It's just, it's so like we did our very first episode ever of Expanded Perspectives. We covered the copper mines. This kind of goes into that. This kind of talks a little bit more about that. But when I think, get my glasses on here. That's right. So I can see a little better because my eyes are giving up. When I think about Detroit, I always think about Motown, right? I don't know why that is. It's just something that I guess because of my mother, right? My mother has always been big into Motown music. Like she loved like the Supremes. My mom likes this Stevie Wonder. She introduced me to Stevie Wonder. And of course, then if you go with Stevie Wonder, you're going to find Diana Ross. You're going to find the Four Tops. You're going to get into a pile of them, right? And you can't say anything without talking about the Temptations, Jackson 5, and then the man himself, you know, the guy that really blew the doors off, I guess would be the thing would be Marvin Gaye, right? I mean, like you're talking about some amazing performers that come out of there. Great music even now, right? Like just love it. Love it. So that's kind of what pushed me, I guess you could say, down this path was all the weirdness and then my love for, you know, the Motown sounds. And so it led into that. I found some interesting things. It's not just creatures there in Michigan or in Detroit in particular. It's y'all have got haunted buildings, like a lot, like more than I would realize, like apartment complexes. Like there is a haunted apartment building. I'm not sure. I think you can go and visit the place and all this stuff. But there was an employee back at the Alhambra building, I believe is what it was called, back in like 1904 that poisoned like 40 families in this place, poisoned them. Now, it didn't kill them all. Two people ended up passing away. It's reported by investigators that they'll go in there and that you can still, like the spirits are still there, right, of these two poisoned people. There's a Masonic temple that is reportedly, you know, eat up with ghosts. I'm talking about people feeling like cold hands on their shoulders, cold hands on their back, pushing, you know, stand there and you kind of feel an outside push. There's talking about doors, again, doors opening, closing, slamming, typical stuff, right? Typical everything. There is Fort Wayne there, I believe is. And here's what's strange about Fort Wayne. There was really no battles that took place. Not a historic battle, but they had military houses there and it displaced a lot of people during the Great Depression. And so they believe that maybe that is a site of a sadness or of bane and just all around hatred. There's some really, of course, there's an old asylum, an old abandoned asylum there that's just outside of downtown Detroit. I think it's like 15, 20 miles outside of Detroit. It's called the Eloise Asylum. If you look at the pictures, it looks like it would be haunted, right? Like it looks creepy as hell. It's one of those ones that you see it, you're like, yeah, I'm not going in there. Instantly, the minute you see it, you just kind of know. There's several. Like I said, there's several that we could get into. All of them. It's weird. Like I said, it's all seems to be piled in this one area is strange. But I mean, it is what it is. And this haunted times, this is the best time to talk about it. But before I even jump into that, we have to talk about the dog man. This is it, right? This is it. Get a load of this one, y'all. This one took place near Todd Lake. Of course, I say near. If you pull up a map of Michigan, it's just, I'm surprised. It's pretty much, let's just say it's all water, right? The whole place is water, and y'all just found some dry spots to live. But it's beautiful, but man, there's a lot of lakes up there. So this witness that had this encounter was a teenager at the time, and of course was out behind the house smoking cigarettes, hiding it from the folks, right? Don't let anybody know. Now, this is just outside of Reed City, Michigan. This is back in 1993. Now, y'all don't act like that was a long time ago. Come on now. It was, but I mean, wasn't for me, but anyhow. So it goes on to say that she was facing, after smoking, looking at this big abandoned barn on this next door property, the neighbor's property. And through a hole broken in the siding, she saw what she said or what she thought was a piece of old farm equipment just inside the building. And so she watched for a few moments, said nothing moved. And then a deer, she says, or something other like a large animal, snapped a branch off in the woods. Well, of course, she turns and looks. What the heck's causing that noise? She goes on to say that in her peripheral vision, that she noticed that the farm machinery through that hole, I'm supposed, moved also. And when she looked back, the sun, of course, is setting, is silhouetting this object that's in the barn. And at that moment, she said she just froze because she realized what she had seen or what this silhouetted man out was a very large animal. She states that it turns its head back and looks straight at her. And in her words, she says it was at least 6 foot tall, if not taller, that it was dark colored. And it had, y'all ready for this? A dog-like appearance, which it had a pointy nose, like long snout, and really big pointed ears. Now she takes off to her house. I'm sure she drops the butt, stomps it out, you know, well, she flicks, whatever. Drops the Lucy and runs into the house, right? Goes to grab a flashlight, comes outside, turns it on, shines it over there towards the barn. The animal's not there. She gets closer to the barn and looks for tracks in the snow. She didn't see any. She said, well, then that means that it might still be in there. She turns and runs back to the house at this point. She thinks it's gone. She sets in, maybe it's not gone. She books it out of there, never sees it again. So she goes and she tells her friend, right? She's talking to a friend and her friend saw something. It said the size of a buffalo, but the shape of a dog in the same barn just at way earlier before this. Now, the girl that she's speaking to that says, I saw it. She said, it affected me. She's like, it messed with me for several days, not the creature itself, but seeing it. She almost talks like some sort of, you know, like we talk about infrasound. It really wasn't that, but it was like some sort of dread sense of something that this creature left on her, kind of stained her with. And she said for several days after that, she wasn't right. Like couldn't sleep, was somewhat anxiety ridden, just really had a hard time for about a week after that. And then it went away. Like you get up one day, it's gone. That, I think that's an interesting point to bring up because we've covered this, right? We've talked about these people that get these dark feelings. And what do we always tell everybody on the show? We always talk about it. If you get that gut feeling, trust it, right? Those that don't trust it are those that go missing. When you get that gut feeling, hang on to it. It's there for a reason. There's another one that goes on to state this. Says, my friend and I were walking in the woods behind my house and I was recording with my phone and something made me look over in a certain direction. Well, I glance over and I see a black figure that appeared to be, of course, standing up on two legs, but it had real long arms. And I notice that it's completely black and completely hairy and about 7 foot tall. And that's when this creature noticed us, noticing it. We turned and ran, and it gave chase. Goes on to say, I thought of a bear, but after I viewed the video, I realized it was definitely not a bear. It had been behind a tree, and then it came out and turned towards us. It stood completely still and made no effort to advance towards us, of course, till I think they ran. It says, we didn't give it a chance. I grabbed my friend. I yelled, let's get out of here, and we took off. Says they go back and they put the video on the TV screen so they can kind of blow it up and that they notice what was chasing them or what they got video footage of looked to be just like a werewolf. Now they couldn't see any eyes And they state that, I believe if this was a, was not, they're saying it could have been a shapeshifter, like a demon or something had taken this place. But they also believe that it was a dog man. Now, this encounter happened October 30th of 2016. So we're getting close, y'all. If you're living up there, we're getting close. All right. Here's another one that took place back in February of 2009. It states in November of 08, I had broken my arm and I was basically just stranded here at the house. Well, I was unable to drive or go to work, and I was kind of going crazy with boredom. So my best friend showed up and picked me up, and we would go for a drive. Well, one day we were driving about 35 miles north of Muskegon. Anyway, said, talked to him, said, just take me back. We're going to go visit some friends and all that. Said the friend took me to dinner and out to see movie stuff, and then would just take me home. Said, just truly just being a good friend. Said, well, one night she was driving me home, and it was very late, well after 11 p.m. So we were on U.S. Highway 31 northbound around the Rothbury area of Oceana County on the expressway. Now, being February in Michigan, the roads were naturally snowy and scattered with patches of ice and bare pavement. And there was a small pickup in front of us, about five car lengths ahead. And all of a sudden, we saw something on two legs dart out from the left just in front of an overpass. It ran across the two-lane highway and hit the back of the small pickup in the rear quarter panel, causing the pickup to fishtail. Now, luckily, the driver of the small truck regained control, but they didn't stop to see what collided with their truck. If anything, it seemed to pick up speed and get out of there. My friend and I watched in utter astonishment as this creature finished running to the right and then disappeared off into the weeds and the trees that were along the edge of the highway. And this creature never broke stride. It ran through, even hitting the truck, ran straight through like it wasn't there. Well, we both sat there, stared at, you know, at each other in silence. And I finally said, hey, did you see? And she cut me off and said, yeah, I saw it. Well, we rode all the way back to my house in total silence. Never discussed it riding back. Goes on to say that what they saw looked like a giant dog, or at least like a giant wolf, but that this giant wolf was on its hind legs and was standing at least 7 foot tall. Said its ears were pointed, and get a load of this, y'all. It had a mane, like a type, they said this, like a lion's mane, but it had a mane around its neck that was very dark in color, and its hind legs looked just like a dog's. And they said it was even more pronounced as dog legs because it was running on its hind legs. Now, this is neat here. It says the front legs were swinging freely as it ran, and then it seemed to have its mouth open. And it had a very elongated face. They said the face reminds us of a border collie. Had the long nose, the whole thing. But it was covered by much longer hair than what would normally be on a dog's face. Said this entire creature seemed to be covered in long hair all over, but I can't recall if it had a tail. Something tells me I think it did, but I can't say for sure. So we thought perhaps that it had been the dog man, is what they say here. And it says, being a former Native American area, we've heard stories, but never met anyone that had had a first-hand encounter. It was always someone who knew someone, right? But now my best friend and I definitely saw it, and definitely had a first-hand experience. Said the encounter was very brief, just a matter of moments. That was it. But it was in front and center with the lights, clear as a bell. This took place back in February of 09. So again, another dog man. Now, I don't know why, like we've discussed, I don't know why I'm so fascinated with dog man. I don't, why isn't Bigfoot good enough, right? Why aren't we just like, all right, Bigfoot's good enough. Why we got to bring in dog man? Like, now I got to think about something. Now I don't want to see one. I don't want to be involved in one. I'd like to see one maybe dead. Somebody shot one and there it is. And we can be like, what, giant werewolf? But I don't want to be involved in looking for dog man. But I don't think you get that choice. I think dog man goes looking for you, right? Another one took place here that says, I encountered a bipedal wolf-like creature in western Michigan while shoveling snow, said it just south of Rothbury, Michigan. I decided to take a walk in my family's woods, and that's when my life changed forever. My family owns 270 acres near Montague, Michigan, they're apparently in there. So it says, I ventured into the woods like I've done hundreds of times, right, to walk around and follow the little creek and walk through. So they've got deer stands up there on their property. So they're just chilling out there, right? It's great. It's what I love about the place I get to go hunt on and all that is sometimes I just go out there. It's, you know, 300 acres. I just go out there and walk. You just go walk around, look. It's just fun to be out there. Said everything was going great, going as planned. For about 300 yards south of the house, that's when I stopped again here to have a cigarette. So this person here is smoking as well. Said, I'm looking for deer or coyotes or just whatever. If you can see animals moving, right? Looking back and forth. Said, that's when I noticed this figure. And this figure sent fright and chills through my body and froze me in place. This thing made eye contact with me. And when it did, it stood up. Now, this thing was hairy and it had very broad shoulders and its eyes were amber colored. Now, I love that they added that, right? Like that golden color. And it let out a growl unlike any other I've heard. This wolf, as I call it, made two large leaps and vanished. Now, the craziest thing about it, or let's say the most surprising, was how quiet the woods were up to when I had my encounter. Now, how crazy is that? They're talking about the silence, right? Complete and total silence. I love that idea. I don't know why. Like we talk about the Oz effect, the predators. That's something that you can always, and I've talked about this before, and people that may not go in the woods, and you can do it anywhere, but if you start noticing, if you're going for a hike and you hear birds and you're used to all that, and I'm not talking about if there's not any around, right? But like you'll hear birds, you hear squirrels. Lots of times squirrels, you know, will do the barks. They're barking at a predator. They're letting you know that there's something in the area. They're letting others know and everything learns to listen. But when that place goes totally silent, that's when it's the most disturbing lots of times because you know it's either you. They've either gone silent because of you. Or it's because there's something else out there that's even more terrifying to whatever animal it is. But that's not where it stops, y'all. This is where it gets pretty awesome. So this took place in Detroit, Michigan. Now, this one here says that it was on May 21st back in 2016. Now, it's funny because we have talked about the USOs, right? Not just UFOs, but the underwater, you know, or whatever we're talking about. We want some underwater craft or whatever. We love this kind of stuff. So this took place. A person posted this and talked about being a volunteer at Bell Island Aquarium, where they give tours there, right? Back in 2016, it says that we were leaving the aquarium after helping prep some of the recently renovated tanks for public display. As we were leaving the aquarium through the main entrance and headed towards the parking lot and my car, we heard a loud noise coming from the direction of the river and the strand. Now, we didn't really pay attention to it at first and got in my car and left the aquarium. And as we got off that onto the avenue there, we heard the sound again, and this time it got our attention. We turned right toward the strand and then turned right. Now, this would take us the long way around towards the bridge. But since it was clear and nice that night, we didn't mind. As we traveled down the strand, looking around to hear the source of this loud sound, we saw a disturbance in the water about 30 foot from the shore by Dawson Museum. We thought maybe a plane had crashed into the river and was sinking, and we could see lights under the water. Now I'm going to stop right there. I never thought of that. I may have told y'all, I think I've brought it up on the show a couple of times. I may have told y'all, I distinctly remember years ago whenever, I believe it was the space station or part of the space, something that they had let burn in, right? It fell out of orbit and was falling back to Earth and it like burned up, believes what it was. But anyhow, I remember being at my house at the time outside and I had completely forgotten that it was going to happen in this next day or so. And for a split second, This was right at dusk, so it's almost sunset where it's golden hour, right? It's beautiful. The sun's below the horizon, still glowing. It's still dark enough that you can see whatever it is coming down, right? Like, it's that perfect hour for creepy, creepy sightings. And I remember not paying attention. I'd pulled up to my mother-in-law's house. I'd gotten out. I was picking some stuff up for my wife. I jumped out, and I remember looking up, and I witnessed it. I saw this stuff, and for a few seconds, there was a weird feeling, because, you know, as everyone listening to this, we're all nerds, right? We're all sci-fi and horror and whatever the creepy, weird nerds are, right? So when you see something like that, that you're unprepared for just a little bit, your mind goes crazy. And I was like, oh, what's going on, right? Like, the world's ending. What's happening? And then it's, oh, wait, yeah, I remember what's going on now. But I never thought about it being like this in the water, is how easy it would be to panic for a second, or to think, oh, my goodness, is there a plane crashed in the water? We just had one crash not a couple of weeks ago, right over here at Lake Worth again. You know, shot one off out in there. It happens. So I'd never thought about people mistaking it for a plane crash. But it goes on to say that about 30 seconds after noticing the commotion in the water, we saw a ball-like object rise out of it. And it was about as big as a softball if you held it at arm's length. So just a little orb, it sounds like. It hovered in the same spot for about 15 seconds and then shot off towards the east. It rapidly gained altitude and then got smaller and smaller until it disappeared. Yeah, that's what it does. It looks like it's getting smaller because it's flying away. Afterwards, everything went back to normal and we watched it disappear into the night sky. We stayed there for about 5 minutes till a passing City of Detroit police officer stopped and told us that we needed to get going. We didn't take any pictures or videos because it all happened way too fast. And honestly, we were pretty shocked when it all went down. So if you didn't notice the commotions in the water and the orbs of them coming and going, right, would you even notice it? If you think about something the size of a softball, hell, let's say it's the size of a beach ball and it's coming up out of the river somewhere. And let's say it happens at midnight, right? I don't know what. But if you didn't notice it just the minute it went down, would you? Nobody would, right? You're talking about something that would have the ability to come and go whenever it felt like it. And that brings me around to Lake Michigan. So now we've made the circle into the Lake Michigan. And did y'all know that there is a Lake Michigan triangle? And in this triangle, it's a lot like the Bermuda Triangle. Ships go missing. There's UFO sightings in it. All kinds of weird things. All kinds of strange and unusual things. There is a fella named Bill Wangman at, y'all's names already, right? A historian for the Sheboygan, that's a great name. That's a great word. Sheboygan, Wisconsin. And apparently he has spent a lot of time at Lake Michigan doing a lot of research. And our good friend, Miss Linda Godfrey. She actually wrote a book about it, y'all, called Weird Michigan. So if you want to check that out, it's your travel guide to Michigan's local legends and best kept secrets. So if you want to jump into that and you're from that area and didn't know, check it out. Check out Linda's book. She covers a bunch of stuff in there in it. Things that I didn't know, though, there's like 40 planes have disappeared over Lake Michigan also. I had no idea with that. A whole bunch of ships, right? A whole bunch of ships. The plane, I think there was, what was it here? There was a Northwest Airlines flight called 2501 that left New York City and was headed for Minneapolis back in 1950, and it crashed into Lake Michigan off of Benton Harbor. Of course, no survivors on that. Now, there's UFO sightings, and even the FAA has talked. They've created a special lake reporting service that you can go, and I think you could still look it up, that's got reported sightings in and around Lake Michigan, which is crazy. It's wild that there's so much that they felt it was necessary to do that again. I believe Linda's even interviewed, I believe it's in there, that there's a ferry captain that's been on Lake Michigan for like 30 or 40 years. And said, talks about, you know, hearing things, seeing things, little stuff there, but says that, you know, he's never seen anything strange personally. And, you know, he goes back and forth, and he is like in what people say is the most dangerous. Here's a quote. There's dozens of these stories about different things that have occurred out there and people that have been lost and sailors that have disappeared off of ships. And some people claim that there is something supernatural going on out here on the lake. But like I said, of course, he says nothing. I've not really seen anything. Now, there's some other, like I said, shipwrecks that's going to go on. I think there's one, the schooner back in the day, like in the early, like 100 years ago, I think is when it went down, of the Rosabella. There's like 11. There was passengers got killed and drowned, and they lost crewmen. A lot of that. There's a lot of stuff. They'd found it floating upside down. There's several of these crazy shipwrecks. Now, it's also hard to, like, I was unaware growing up down here in Texas, you don't know, right? Like, we can't wrap our heads around the vastness of the Great Lakes or any of the large bodies of water up there. We have one natural lake in the state of Texas. One. It's Caddo Lake. That's it. That's out in East Texas, y'all. It's beautiful. Look it up. CADDO. Check it out. I've been there with Lyle, you know, and a bunch of us would go out there because of Bigfoot sightings, and it's not far from Jefferson. If y'all ever make the trip to come down and want to go check out the Jefferson Bigfoot Conference, Caddo Lake's right there. You can go check it out. Spanish moss, cypress trees. It looks like where the swamp thing should live, right? Like, that's what it is. But that doesn't change the fact that, yeah, we've got some big lakes, but nothing like that. Like, those are seas. Those are legit oceans of fresh water. Crazy. So if I look back in the 1800s, like this one here, there's several. Like I said, 1875, 10 crew members lost. Wreck was covered, right? This was off of near Grand Haven. Some of the strangest here says the disappearance of the schooner Thomas Hume, which disappeared without a trace in Lake Michigan in 1891. And it was sailing from Chicago to Muskegon, Michigan, to hauling lumber. You know, and what is always think of, what is it, the Edmund Fitzgerald? I always think of that song, too, when you think about this stuff. But when I look at these shipwrecks, I'm thinking these are shipwrecks from, like I said, the 1800s. Right? We're not talking about happening last week. We're talking about happening in the 1800s. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. If you're talking about a sailing ship and not knowing to be able to foretell weather, there's so many other things that it could be. Now, I'm not saying that there's not other crazy stuff going on. We've had them all the way up until the 1930s. There's been some that have gone missing, some ships that have gone down. A lot of wild stories, right? And, of course, they try to add credibility to it. And I get it. I understand what they're doing here. But that's still not to talk about, but this is still an old time in sailing, as it's not going on now. And so it makes me lend more towards human error and the weather, because, man, the weather down there, what is it, a line from that song? Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the waves turn the minutes to hours? Like, that's what terrifies me about the ocean, or about water in general. And then I found this. Now, I'm sure some of you that remember when I was doing the Cryptid Classroom, and I'm fixing to do some more of those. Do you remember? I have to open my book here because I've got it written down in front of me. You would think I wouldn't forget it, but I want to make sure I pronounce it right. The Meme Gwashi. Y'all remember when I was talking about the Meme Gwashi, which is like some kind of crazy, like it's got it like a child with a hair covered face, and how it's like, oh, it's a creepy, creepy thing, right? Well, there's more than just the Meme Gwashi. There is also what is known as the Mishapishu. The Mishapishu is the underwater panther. Yeah, that's right. You heard me correct. The underwater panther. Now, according to, it says to the Algonquins, that the underwater panther is an extremely powerful underworld being that's there. And the Ojibwe, they say that they are the masters of all water creatures, even including the snakes in this area. Now, there is some wild stories with it, too. Now, what I love the most, like we talked about with the copper, they say, whenever I say they were talking about back in the day, the natives and all this stuff said that the Mishapishu was there to guard the copper in Lake Superior and the Great Lakes area, and that the indigenous people in that area mined copper, you know, and we've discussed all this for long ago. But when missionaries started showing up and all this, they started stealing the copper from the indigenous people. And while in that region, if you did that, that was going against the natural order of things. And that the Mishapishu, or the Mishapishu, was the... Okay, so you, like we talked about the Thunderbird, right? The Thunderbird controlled the air and all this. So the Machu Picchu controlled the water. So that was their balance, the, like the light and the dark or the wet and the fire, or however it worked out. So that's what you would do. So it was forbidden or really extremely frowned upon. Now, this could have easily been a story told by the Native Americans, and then they would exact their revenge on the missionaries for stealing, or it could have truly been that that went on there. There is a story about a Jesuit missionary, last name of Dablon, that was actually chronicled a story about, I believe it was four Ojibwe Indians, is what they said, the natives Ojibwes. And the story was that they, I don't know why this is, but that they had were going to take copper back, and that they had gotten some copper and loaded up in their thing, in their kayak or their canoe, and was paddling off, and then the water panther came up and grabbed them and, you know, ripped the canoe to pieces, and only one of them died, right? And that the one of, or I'm sorry, only one of them lived, and that he was gravely injured, and that they took his story right as he was dying when people found him as he made his way back. And there's always one, right? The story could never go on if, well, he killed all four. Like, yeah, we get it. We just had to guess. There's always one that makes it back. So it's kind of a strange representation of, could it really be a creature? Could it be a misidentification? Could it have been mankind? What's very, very interesting, though, is back in 03, there was an archaeologist named Brad Lepper, and he posed a question about the alligator effigy mound that's in Granville, Ohio, and believes that that might actually be a representation of the water panther, the underwater panther, the Machu Picchu. He believes that maybe the natives, this is what they called the alligators in this area, and that the early Europeans had never seen them. And then as they were in there, that's what this was, because it kind of makes sense. When you get the descriptions of it, it looks like a long lynx-like body, but it's got a long tail, and then it looks like it's got horns, or it's got like spikes down its back and off the side of its head, and it's got these like dagger spikes on its tail. You get all these things, like you could easily see how it could be misconstrued as from a, you know, a Mitsubishi, whatever this is, to an underwater panther. You could easily see how that goes. There's even another one there in Dewey Lake. And if you're from that area, everyone knows of the Dewey Lake monster. It's in Cass County, Michigan. Here's another thing. It's not massive. Like, the lake's not huge. It's a 174-acre lake, pretty good size, but 60 foot deep. There's a bunch of lakes in this area, which makes sense. And what I say by that is, it seems like around waterways is where you're going to see Bigfoot. And that seems to be what this is. This lake monster, the Dewey Lake monster, seems to be a Bigfoot. There's a story that goes that back in 1974, there were some locals, and they brought some people to the lake and all this stuff. And what they had seen, these people there, ended up seeing what they described as a 400-pound, 10-foot-tall monster. And they claimed that it attacked some of the witnesses that was there one evening, and they chalked it up to wrong place, wrong time. This goes on. There's a lot of stories that go into it. They said some of the terrified witnesses even claimed that the creature was semi-aquatic and that it would lurk just below the surface of the lake, and then it would crawl out at night looking for food. Now, that's creepy as hell, too. Those that had seen it in and near the water say that it had scaly skin, large claws like a bear, and they believe that it breathed water through gills, that it had lungs and gills so it could breathe there. So now we're talking about, what is it, the creature from the Black Lagoon, which is funny because it's right around that time too, right? It's probably within 15 years or so of the release of that movie, whenever all this stuff comes out. So who really knows? There are a lot of things that go on with it. Like I said, there's a lot of really interesting stories that go on with this Dewey Lake monster. Seems to be a big feat. But the story, like I said, that I wanted to leave y'all with was the story of the Nain. I don't know if it's Rouge or Rogue, right? I think it's Rouge. The Nain Rouge is, I believe, how it's supposed to be pronounced. This story is really, really great. And what I bring up the Nain Rouge is because it stands for, or is better known as, the Red Dwarf of Detroit. I know that they have parades in Detroit for the Nain Rouge. I know that they have beer that's made after it. So I'm going to give you a little story behind it. This comes from a book back in the 1800s, 1880s, called The Legends of La Detroit. And this is what it says, that on March 10th of 1701 in St. Louis, Quebec, a party was being held in honor of Antoine de la Monte Cadillac, the founder of Detroit. You like his last name, Cadillac? Word. As the night went on, the fortune teller, complete with a black cat perched on her shoulder, came to the home. They let her in, and she began to read palms. The men were amazed at her ability, and she finally wandered over to Cadillac. She gazed into his palm and told him how he was going to start a great city. Cadillac urged her to continue, but the future became grim as the fortune teller told him, "In years to come, your colony will be the scene of strife and bloodshed. The Indians will be treacherous. The hated English will struggle for its possession, but under a new flag, it will reach a height of prosperity which you never in your wildest dreams pictured." So Cadillac continues. He starts talking to the woman. Things go back. She tells him, "Your future and theirs," talking about his children, "lie in your own hands. But beware of undue ambition. It will mar all of your plans." Now, here's where it gets wild, y'all. Listen. She told him, "Appease the Nain Rouge. Beware of offending him. Should you be thus unfortunate, not a vestige of your inheritance will be given to your heirs." And that's exactly what happened. What are you going to do? Cadillac's going to laugh it off, right? She's a party trick. Y'all paid her to come here. We're having some drinks. We're like, woo-hoo-hoo, that's great. He goes home. He tells his wife this whole thing. Whole deal's a big joke to him, right? As it is with everybody. Of course, you know, they did a few things. You know what I'm talking about, back in the day when they'd have seances and all this stuff. So she's there monkeying around doing her thing. It's great. Now, don't forget, though, this isn't like in the 1920s. This was back in the 1700s, 1701. So that was a hot minute ago, right, when all this stuff went down. So the story goes, he starts founding Detroit. His wife, you know, they're all doing all this stuff, and they're talking about, and as he's going by, after Detroit's founded, he's trying to run it as best he can. He starts hearing some of the locals are talking how they're not liking it. One of them, and they even put it in the book, says, "Things cannot run very long. Thus, my wife saw a few days ago, La Petite Nain Rouge," which is, you know, the whole thing of the Nain Rouge, the red dwarf. So he and the wife hear it allegedly, and his wife freaks out, and she's like, "Look, you're going to have to do something." So the story goes that they start headed home, and while headed home, they end up seeing it, right? They see the Nain Rouge. They see the red dwarf. And the story goes that as it approached them, that Cadillac hit it with his cane, and it was a little creepy fake character, and that he was swinging his cane at it and kicking at it and telling it to get out of here because he didn't want it to be in his life. He didn't want it to ruin his life. Sure enough, that's what happens. Everything falls apart for him. And because of his disrespect, everything went into ruin. You jump forward, there's some sightings. 1736, they said near the Detroit River that they spotted it. July 30th, actually, was near the Detroit River. The very next day, Chief Pontiac killed 60 men. And that was during the Battle of Bloody Run. You jump forward again to 1805. People claim that they saw a red dwarf walking down the streets. And then on June 11th of that year, most of Detroit burned. So this is almost like the Detroit version of the Mothman. When the Nain Rouge shows up, you all in trouble. So there was a general named General William Hull, and he was the only officer in the American Army to ever be sentenced to death for military incompetence. And he went on to say that he had claimed that he saw the red dwarf and it was grinning at him in 1813 when he surrendered Detroit to the British Army. So when he turned it all over, it was around that time, I guess he knew it was done. People claim that in 1967, during the riots, the week-long riots there in Detroit, that someone saw the dwarf. It's been reported before that. You go all the way back up into 1976. There was several linemen and utility workers out working, and they had claimed that they had noticed something climbing a utility pole while they were on it. Looking down, something else climbed it. What they described? A red dwarf. That same year, ice storm wipes out the city, possibly one of the worst. Jump again. Another ice storm hit Detroit in 1997. Another one in 2004 had a giant blackout. Both times, the Nain Rouge was spotted. Now, here's some really, really, if that's not strange enough, really strange things about the Nain Rouge. They said, could it have been that this area was either blessed or cursed, right? Blessed or cursed by the natives of the area, by a shaman, or is this truly a shaman? Is the Nain Rouge nothing more than a shaman who has dedicated all of his afterlife to making sure that the place he loves is still there, is still, you know, respected? Or is it simply just an evil entity that just comes and goes at whim, when it wakes up, when it goes to sleep, whatever? It's very, very strange. But I found a story here. I'm trying to see who actually wrote this story here. I can't find it. It's on, it's a, what is this place? Because I had never read this part of it, but I'm going to read it to you here. I'm going to read you this whole thing. It comes some cool and interesting stuff. I want to, all right, here we go. I'm going to read this to you. It says, in 1858, a 138-foot-long, 385-ton wooden brig called the Blackhawk, built by Stevens and Presley of Ohio City, sailed from Detroit, Michigan to Liverpool, England, laden with very strange cargo. Down in the hold, stowed away among the 19,000 bushels of corn and padded parcels of stained glass, there was a barrel. And this barrel contained the pickled corpse of something truly terrifying. See, in June of 1763, British Captain James Delisle and 58 of his officers were followed near the banks of the Detroit River by a small, misshapen, crimson-clad figure with penetrating eyes, a large, fanged mouth, and a hideous scarlet face. Several soldiers shot at this weird-looking figure. An old trapper warned Captain Delisle and his men that they were being stalked by what the French settlers called the Nain Rouge, or the Red Gnome, a sinister, supernatural entity whose appearance foretold misfortune and death. Sure enough, shortly after seeing the Crimson Dwarf, Captain Delisle and his soldiers were ambushed and massacred by the Indian chief Pontiac, and the blood of the slain turned the tributary of the Detroit River red for days. Decades earlier, the founder of Detroit goes on and it tells the story of what I've just talked about. But here's what's really wild. It says, around the end of 1857, there was a rumor that two hunters had killed the Red Gnome in a forest, that they had shot him several times and fixed him to a tree with their bayonets to prevent his escape. And then the body had been exhibited and packed in salt. Yeah. And now it goes on to say that the superstitious people of the colony arranged for the monstrosity to be burnt, for there was a widespread fear that it would return to life. And a bonfire was built in a clearing. But someone approached the men who had killed the strange creature and purchased it for an undisclosed sum. A collector of oddities in Liverpool, England, arranged for the Red Gnome's cadaver to be shipped to the home of warehouse keeper Michael Colony at 25 Clarence Street, Everton. The Black Hawk brig brought the curious cargo to Liverpool docks, and the small cask was delivered to the wrong Clarence Street. There were three streets of that name in the city at the time, and instead of going to Everton, it was delivered to the home of Abraham Harris, a jeweler living at 25 Clarence Street in city center. A servant signed for the cask, and Mr. Harris was horrified when he saw the grotesque little man pickled in a brine barrel. The cask was stored in the cellar, and in the evening, when the jeweler went down to show a colleague the terrifying corpse, they found the barrel empty and its lid lying on the floor. The evil-looking creature was never seen again. Had someone stolen the Red Gnome, or was the real explanation more sinister? I wished I could find who wrote that, because I love the whole thing, but it's coolandinterestingstuff.com. You can go check that little story out right there. That story alone makes me want to look in to see if anything else strange had ever happened in Liverpool, right? So we've covered water cryptids, we've covered UFO sightings, we've covered dog man, and I'm going to leave you with the Nain Rouge. So Faye, so it still feels like, is there something sinister in and around Michigan, or is it more likely that something's there keeping a watch over that part of the country? Because its heart and soul is that part of the country. Folks, I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll wrap this baby up. Thanks for sticking around. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And there we go.
Yes.
Some wild strangeness. We got dog men. We got sea creatures. We got, or, you know, lake monsters that Kyle loves. We got the Nain Rouge, or the Nine. We got, yeah, red dwarves that could possibly be just like the Mothman, just bringing bad news all the way around.
There's a lot of strange sightings in the state of Michigan. And I guess because it's so rural, you know what I mean? Like large portions of it. I know, obviously, there's big towns like Detroit and stuff.
And it's a pretty place.
It is.
Man, yeah. All up in that part of the United States is pretty.
Especially that Upper Peninsula.
Yeah, and then look where we live. Like, you literally drive 2 hours from where we live. If you get on the interstate, folks, drive 2 hours west, you're in the real thickness of West Texas. And it looks like, if you watch any old Western movie, it looks like that all the way to Arizona when we drove out there.
Yeah. If you go 2 hours east, it's all forest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're in the plains and lakes is where we're kind of at, above the hill country.
That's right.
And yeah, it's I think it's pretty, but it's just because that's where we were raised. But it's not the kind of pretty like you see when you see beautiful lakes and lush green river bottoms and stuff like that.
I agree.
This is mesquite trees and oak scrub and all that stuff. I mean, it's pretty big rolling hills, you know, carved down through there, but it doesn't look anything like Michigan. And I need to go up there. I want to go to Michigan and Wisconsin.
Isn't that where the Nuge is from?
That's where, yes.
He lives down here now.
Theodosius Atrocious. Yes, he does. That's right.
Right.
The Motor City Madman.
You know how we're always talking about undiscovered animals being rediscovered and things like that? Well, it just happened again. And we're not talking about something small like a little tiny insect or a little shrew.
Yeah.
This is a giant owl. That's right. They said a giant owl, which hasn't been seen in the wild for 150 years, was just spotted by two British scientists in the African rainforest.
Wow. Now, see, that's cool to find something like that.
Yeah, and this has been reported in several science magazines. They said the last confirmed sighting of the Shelley's Eagle Owl, which is native to Central and Western Africa, was in the 1870s.
No way.
They said the giant owl is officially classified as an at risk of extinction or extinct. But now they said that they believe that there could be more. They said on the 16th of October, Dr. Joseph Tobias, an Imperial College London's Department of Life Sciences, and a Dr. Robert Williams, an ecologist from Somerset, were working in the Etowa Forest in Ghana when they stumbled across the magnificent creature. He said, when we lifted our binoculars, our jaws dropped. They thought that this thing had been dead and extinct for over 150 years, but they have not just photographs of it, they have video of it, and they've since found what they think is up to 12 or 15 of them.
Look, this is going to sound corny, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. It's going to sound silly, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. That makes me so happy for those two guys.
Right.
Because imagine putting all the work into whatever you're listening to. Imagine right now, whoever's listening right now, the peak of your, what you do, or a dream that you had, right? Like, imagine this is what you do. You do research, ornithology. This you are the bird guy.
Everything's been found already.
Your friends, all the people that you and your wife, or you and your partner, whoever, all of them, they know you're the bird guy. I come to Kyle. Kyle's the bird guy.
I'm the bird man. I fly in any weather.
That's right. And then you get to find that.
A giant owl.
Like you said, it's all been found. And you pull your binoculars up. I hope everybody that listens to my voice right now gets to experience that kind of joy at least once in their life.
So here's,
because I bet that guy is on cloud nine, man.
Oh, yeah. And he's probably got colleagues that are haters, right?
Oh,
and
they're
like, yeah, I knew it was there. Yeah, I saw that 2 years ago.
I told him to go down there and look for it. I'm the one that did all the work on the maps.
Yeah, you know. But again, that just goes to show you, when something is extinct or thought not to be around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Something large like a giant owl. I mean, I saw the photographs. It looks like the size of like a great horned owl or a large barn owl.
Yeah, but that's not, like you said, that's not like you found an insect or a tiny frog. I mean, you're right. Like, bro, this is a bird.
Which leads me to believe that there's a lot of these people, rural farmers and ranchers in the inner parts of Tasmania and stuff, that say that they've seen the thylacine.
Mokele Mbembe.
Or they are there in the Congo.
I mean, come on,
the thylacine
on,
seems more realistic than Mokembe
Mbembe. You need to get on out of here with that.
I mean, I'm not going
to
lie.
Time for you to go
if
home.
All of a sudden there was a large apatosaurus roaming the Congo. I mean, I would be like, that's cool.
If you read that up right there, you'd be like, excuse me? I want to know this because, you know, we talked about the roping years ago.
Yeah,
right?
The Ndava bird.
I want to know is, Because would they have ever, and there's probably no way of answering it. I'm sure that there are some that could. I wonder if they could ever, over the years, would they shrink? Like, would they stay alive long enough in this time in order for them to evolve to where they could have still been alive?
I don't know.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, I do.
Because we've had them, you know, we're talking about recent sightings within the last 100 years. Some of them even within the last 30 years. Some of them even within the last 5 years where people have seen those down there in New Guinea and in and around these areas of these islands, much like any of this. And now you're telling me you found a horned bird. Right. I mean,
they have the bioluminescence. And there's lots of natives that swear that they've seen them.
Yeah.
And if you're asking them, according to Paul Nation, like a lot of them aren't that surprised. They're like, yeah.
Yeah.
You're the Endava bird? Yeah.
That's what was surprising to him is that they weren't surprised.
I like the stories of like the Japanese soldiers seeing them in World War II on some of those islands.
Flushing them out of caves.
Yeah.
I do too.
That's cool.
It's because we're dorks.
Speaking of cool, you went and saw the new movie Antlers.
I certainly did.
How was it?
I enjoyed it. It was exactly what I hoped it to be. That's all I can say. I wanted it to be a certain way, and it's exactly kind of how it turned out. It's dark.
I think we're going to go see it this week.
I've also went and saw the new James Bond.
Right. I've heard it was good.
It's very good.
Only with the older people.
Yeah, it's very good. I will wear that proudly. I'm a James Bond fan. I'm a huge Daniel Craig as James Bond fan. Right.
Oh, I'm a big fan of James Bond. Yeah. I'm a big fan of like the video game back in the day, dude. Oh, I remember me and my bruds.
I remember this.
Back when we were in college, like that's all we would do is play GoldenEye for hours.
We were just eat pizza,
stay up
four
all night,
screens,
drink ice cold Miller Lite. Yeah, it was a great time.
Yeah.
Now you got responsibilities.
Now you got to be an adult. But yeah, Antlers is very good. I would say that if you wanted to go see it, if you like it, it's not what you think it's going to be as far as like... You don't see the creature as much as you think.
That's good, I think.
That's the whole thing. It's like if you're looking for something, but you do get to see it. You do get to the whole thing, the whole story. I like how they did it.
I like where you don't get to see the creature. I mean, like that's what makes Jaws good. That's what makes Alien good.
They've left it where they could possibly do another one if they wanted to, which is crazy to say, but it's the way. I think it'll be good. Yeah.
That sounds awesome. Speaking of awesome, if you have any cool stories you want to share with me and Cam, please don't hesitate. Email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Also, don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. Just go to the website, expandedperspectives.com, click on the Elite tab, and sign up is easy. It's $5 a month, and you'll get extra shows every month, as well as the access to the entire back catalog. And also, don't forget about our sponsor, Trade. You need to, if you want to get your first bag free, and $5 off your bundle, go to drinktrade.com/expanded. Don't forget about promo code expanded. Also, if you'd like to call us, 888-393-2783. Cam, you got anything else you want to wrap up for this edition of the Halloween episode?
No, I'm good. I guess we gotta go eat some candy. I haven't had candy all day.
Well, I got the hookup.
Oh, here we go. Let's get this done, and we'll go grab a bite of candy. I need a peanut butter cup.
All right. Till next time, folks. Stay safe. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.